of your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew rolls on. The show is jam-packed today. You're not going to want to miss a minute. We do have Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, gubernatorial candidate Tim Pawlenty, and from Fox News, Pete Hegseth, all coming up. But joining us now, friend of the show, from Americans for Prosperity, Jason Flores.
Good morning, guys.
You're here to talk about how much you support this emergency funding, $138 million that Governor Mark Dayton is requesting in aid to move forward with the GOP tax cuts, correct?
Oh, that toothache of yours is really kind of getting in the way of rational thought this morning, isn't it?
I say that with much with
yeah.
Much
I think the listeners picked up on the sarcasm there. And if they know anything about
gracious man, when is he not? Is that just out of pure curiosity? When is he not held the legislature hostage? Well, when does it not happen? When has he just been like, yeah, cool, thumbs up?
The biggest thing, I mean, there's multiple big things and big problems with this Dayton proposal, but I mean, this might not even be the last one. It's only Tuesday of the last week of session. He may change his mind about four or five more things. I mean, last year, he changed his mind about a bill that he had signed earlier in the day. And then decided that he shouldn't have signed it, and then took it out on another bill and line item veto the entire legislative funding because he was mad at himself for signing a bill he didn't actually want to sign, but he signed it anyway. I mean, that's what you're dealing with in the last week of session here, is that kind of instability in decision making.
Yeah.
Right? Where if you're going to change your mind, if you're going to move the goalpost that much, I mean, this emergency funding in schools.
Would you expect anything less at the end of a legislative session with this governor? It's happened every single time.
Well, we should have expected that he was going to double down at the end of his second term. This is his last bite at the apple, right? And that's really where this comes. I think this is, for a lot of folks, this is at the end of the administration. We need to see what we can get one more time, and we need to push the envelope as far as we can go one more time, because there might be somebody different in this office that doesn't just beg for money at the end of session, regardless of your track record in spending.
I know money. I'm being overly cynical when I say this, but I cannot help but feel like this is Governor Dayton's parting gift to Education Minnesota. They funded his elections, and in a large part, they helped get him elected. They've been big supporters. He has consistently been a tool of the unions, of the public sector unions specifically, throughout his administration, throughout his two terms. And I feel like this is his. I know that there's issues with state reimbursement. I know that there are legitimate budget issues happening in a lot of school districts. But to show up at the end of session with this big a number and call it an emergency and say, you can't do anything else until you hand over this check with so little accountability, it just feels like a gift.
Well, and let's be clear, this number just so happens to be the exact size as the tax bills that are moving through. So the emergency funding that has suddenly popped up at the end of session, never mind that schools have had their budgets for months, never mind that they got $500 million new dollars at the end of last session. So not even 12 months ago, got authorized for $500 million new dollars, and yet now there's such a crisis that we need to hold up. We need to destroy the benefits of tax reform. We need to make people file their taxes through a freaking phone book SAT type prep document next year. It's absolutely ridiculous. And if we're going to talk about education funding, random one-time funding at the end of the session, it's not going to do it. Nobody can plan for it, use it, implement it, and guess what? By definition of one time, it's not going to be there.
Well, and that's what I find. Like this situation is obviously frustrating, but what I find even more frustrating is that it continues to set the very precedent that you're talking about. This emergency funding isn't just a blanket fix. It's not a cure-all. And so with such a, I mean, you look at the comments that he made. He says these folks are falling all over themselves, doing whatever they can to help out the moneyed interest of Minnesota. Then you've got school kids who want to have a decent education and they don't have time to consider it. Well, that's just absurd. No, what's absurd is that you just want to take $138 million and throw it at the problem without any type of accountability or talking about the issue or how to actually fix things. And it continues to, again, perpetuate that idea down the road that that's how you fix education, by just throwing money at the problem.
Right. And we've proven in Minnesota, is not going to happen. We are spending billions more in education now than we have. And yet we've got no result. The achievement gap is still worse than the nation. You've got schools. I mean, here's the worst part to me. Everybody in these schools, and all these schools want local control. They want to decide how they're going to do this for themselves. But then they put themselves in these budget holes. Burnsville, as an example, they're while facing a $4 million shortfall already, they approved contracts that increased their cost by $6 million. How do you do that? How do you operate like that? Oh, because somebody else is going to bail me out. They want local control until it's too hard to make any kind of spending decisions, too hard to reform anything, and then they go crying to the state for help. On top of that, you have this huge pot of money that the governor's pretending is going to go all over the state.
No, no.
The majority of it goes to Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Of course.
The vast majority of it goes to Minneapolis and St. Paul. So quit trotting all over the school, going to visit all these. Using Lakeville. Lakeville doesn't have a funding problem. Only 10% of the schools out there have this kind of problem. And ultimately, many of them, they made these local budget decisions themselves.
Right.
The legislature has funded them. They have increased the formula. Last bit of kind of why this is so strange. The governor had his chance last year. The legislature offered the governor a deal at the end of session that actually put even more money in the formula, and the governor turned it down because he wanted that money to go instead to early education programs. He can't even run the K-12 system and administer that properly so that they have what they need or work with them to set their budgets correctly. He wants to expand it down to early childhood, but that's the exact money that he gave last year for one-time grants for these early childhood programs that now he wants for one time for the schools. It just, no amount of money can solve this problem. We need actual reform. We need actual change in the system, and one-time money is never going to lead to that.
Now, what he's saying is that tax reform will not happen. You will not get to federal tax conformity, and Minnesotans will suffer. Minnesotans will pay much higher taxes than they were expecting to if they can't get tax reform, they can't get a tax bill, you know, on the governor's desk and signed into law. He's saying that he's holding that hostage unless he gets his emergency funding. Do you think he'll hold to that? And do you think the Republican Congress will, or the legislature will not bow to this sort of pressure and hold firm in saying, look, if you want this emergency funding, you're going to have to call a special session. We're going to have to work it out then.
This would be a much different conversation if the governor in his State of the Union and in letters in his own supplemental budget that he put together just weeks ago.
Right.
If along the lines, anywhere up until the last 2 weeks of session, he had talked about this need for some kind of targeted assistance to schools,
right,
and made that case. But he hasn't made that case. He's saying, as governor, I'm going to just draw this line in the sand arbitrarily, which happens to be the same size as your tax bill, so that I can pair these up and pretend that they're linked somehow. And now you can't do this good thing for Minnesota that is a priority for you until I get my way. And that's how we've seen him do this at the end of session time and time again. I hope that the legislature calls his bluff on this, because you will squarely put the blame on Governor Dayton and anybody else who's trying to follow in his footsteps. You will put the blame on that mentality that government can just spend money and that the governor can just spend money regardless of any accountability. I mean, look, let's back this up for a second and take this in the big picture. Why would you ever give this administration another dime for anything?
Right.
Yeah. You can't run a website. You can't transfer my vehicle title. We've got elder abuse scandals. You guys are going to talk about it. Literally suitcases of cash of government assistance money taxpayer money leaving the airport in suitcases because it's that easy to defraud your system.
Yeah.
You've already written off tens of millions of dollars of Medicare or of Minnesota care premiums. You don't care about hundreds of millions of dollars of waste, fraud, and abuse in the Medicaid system because it might make somebody, you know, it might cause it's ridiculous. This administration has proven time and again how incompetent it is. I don't know why you would give it another dime for anything.
Well, and because of, and we're going to talk with Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, curious, obviously, to get his thoughts on this. He's quoted in the story here from the Pioneer Press as well, basically saying there's just not enough time to do this. But it really feels like, it does feel like sort of a bluff. Because of everything you said, this could potentially have an impact on the governor's race coming up. This would hold him accountable if the GOP were to stand firm on this. So this feels like this is Dayton just going, I'm going to throw this out there just to throw it out there, right, and I dare you to call my bluff.
Well, and he thinks that he's going to get away with just saying that this tax bill is bad because Republicans did it, so obviously it must be great for all these, you know, rich people and special interests. Well, actually, it raises taxes on business, compared with where they would be otherwise. Use that business tax to fund tax cuts, the first actual income tax cuts in Minnesota in almost 20 years since the year 2000. And, oh, those tax cuts are concentrated at the bottom end of the spectrum, so that if you're on a lower income side of things in Minnesota, you are going to benefit more because of this tax bill that Republicans have signed. It is a good tax bill that is going to preserve, protect those benefits that we've already seen coming from federal tax reform, and extend those to the people in Minnesota who need it the most. That's a good thing. So if the governor wants to be on record holding that up, be my guest.
All he's doing is bolstering the Republicans' arguments going into November. I mean, if Minnesotans are going to be suffering, if they're going to end up paying higher taxes because this governor dug his heels in the sand, threw a end of session temper tantrum, and refused to agree to any sort of tax conformity to lessen the burden on Minnesotans, what argument would the DFL nominee have going forward? The Republican, whoever the Republican nominee is going to have such a strong argument going forward.
Right. And that's why I think he's, in this case, overplaying his hand. I don't know how he can walk back from this kind of an ultimatum a bright red line in the sand, right?
He did it last session. Well, but last session he threw out all these ultimatums, and then the bills came and he signed them all into law, and he did the line item veto of the legislature's funding.
Yep.
That was his temper tantrum last time. So I wouldn't put it past him to go ahead and sign everything into law.
Well, yeah, and in the governor's two terms in office, the public schools have seen $2 billion in new funding already.
And where's that gone? My question is...
That was billion, by the way.
Yeah, it was a B. That was a B.
If you want to talk about increasing funding for schools, you could have me on board with more funds for schools if you're going to do something different with that money.
Right.
If you're going to reform processes, if you're going to add accountability, if you're going to show me a clear path to, if we spend this money, we are going to be able to do these things. These things will lead to higher results. And then, after the course of like that 3 or 4 year test period or implementation period, then, test scores are up. The achievement gap was closer. Things are better measurably in schools. If you could show me that, I'd even take you on faith that that would happen, right? And then reevaluate in 4 years if it doesn't. But we're not saying any of that. We're just saying, well, we have money, therefore we have to spend it, and we can't give it back to taxpayers.
Right.
We have to spend it, and let's spend it on this education system over here that hasn't changed anything how they've operated in the last couple of decades, and just throw more money at a problem where all the billions of dollars we've already spent haven't shown to solve this problem. We need different and real reform.
651-989-5855 if you want to call and comment. Jason Flores, Americans for Prosperity, joins us in studio. Switching gears a bit, Americans for Prosperity, you guys have done some looking at the bonding efforts, right?
Yeah, and we put out a note to legislators yesterday. The House yesterday passed depending on how you count it, whether general fund or including transportation funds, another $1 billion bonding bill. We're dealing with B's again. Remember when the billions were just reserved for the federal government? We're talking about billions here now at the state government. So we're big kids now. But the House passed a $1 billion bonding bill. And remember, they just passed a $1 billion bonding bill last year. And here's our point. We put out a release yesterday. I had comments that went out to the paper and to legislators in advance of the vote. Supposedly, Minnesota has a balanced budget amendment. And every 2 years, we have this knockdown, drag out, end of session, special session more often than not fight about how we can live within this balanced budget requirement. And then we just borrow billions of dollars. We have almost $12 billion of debt sitting on the hot. But I thought the balanced budget was supposed to solve all that, right? Or that to our friends in Washington that want a balanced budget amendment, I think that's going to solve everything. Well, apparently it doesn't. Because Minnesota's got $12 billion of debt sitting out there that in and of itself, okay, given the size of you can come up with all these measures and these debt service guidelines, that lives within the guidelines. But let me put this in terms that listeners will understand. A lot of people out there with your job, with your house, you get qualified for a new house. You can get qualified for a massive house, right? Way more money than you'd ever be able to spend, but you can get qualified for it. You can get that pre-approved loan. You can go out and do it, but you're never going to be able to afford the payments on it. Right? Everybody, we've had this experience where you have to, especially back before the recession in 2008.
Right.
You had to literally tell your realtor, no, I can't. I'm not looking at houses like that. I may have gotten pre-approved
right.
for a house like that, but I can't afford it. I'm not going to do that. That's what we're doing with our debt levels right now. That by these income measures, these debt guidelines that we have set up, it looks like we can afford it. Mm-hmm. But then you get down to the state's budget every year, and we're spending $1.5 billion and growing every year just paying down our debt. We're sitting here talking about $140 million of emergency school funding. That's one-tenth. One-tenth of what we spent just paying off our debt.
But every time they propose a bonding bill, I hear the same thing every time. Now is the time. I mean, we got to do this right now. Now is the perfect time. You know, our credit rating is really good. If we don't do it now, it's just going to cost more later.
And there's some economic, you know, banker-style interest rate comments to that. The bottom line is you still can't afford the debt service.
Exactly.
Is my wife going to a store? Well, these shoes are on a great sale. I have to buy. You don't need $250 heels when we never go out. Right? It's that same type of an argument. Yeah, financial things are, in that sense, we could borrow at good rates compared with some other even more irresponsible states.
Right.
True. Okay, great. Congratulations for that. That doesn't mean that we should be spending the money. And all this is, and you're going to see it in the end of session negotiations here. We said it yesterday when this bill came off the House. It came off the House floor at $1 billion. Trust me, when the governor's done with that and you're done, say you hold the line on this school funding, that means this bonding bill comes back much closer to the ridiculous $1.5 billion that he proposed.
And there's a time and a place for bonding. There are certain things where, certain instances where bonding makes sense. I get all that. I understand all that. But the bottom line is, if you had a government that was really operating with the right set of priorities, and spending money first where government should be spending money, roads, right. bridges, infrastructure, things like that, we wouldn't find ourselves having to use bonding as often as we do and for as many things as we do.
Right. I think that the legislature should be commended. In the last couple of years, they've done a much better job at getting rid of some of those local interests, those little right. nice little civic center, yeah. spam museum, sheet music museum, but you know, those terrible cases.
I don't want to have to drive 15 miles to the next hockey rink. I need one closer to me.
Right. So you've gotten the state out of the business of some of those local projects. You're concentrating it more on core infrastructure. That's absolutely where we should be. But just think, if we got a handle on this debt, especially in a time of surplus, especially right. when just this last month the state collected revenue above projections almost equal to part of the surplus, right? We're on the right track. Economic growth is bringing in more revenues to government. If we can get away from constantly borrowing and putting ourselves into debt, we can shrink that level. We can get these debt service payments back under control. I mean, they're 2.5 times what they were just 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so if we can get that money back, we could actually spend it ongoing moving forward and do some of these things that you'd like to be able to do, or have more money to give back to taxpayers.
Drew, it's almost like they didn't listen to you at the start of session when you had suggested maybe you just don't do anything.
Right.
Maybe you just go that and go, I know, right? I mean, that's essentially what we're talking about. It was
back at the beginning of session.
Not so long ago.
I was young, naive, and optimistic. Jason Flores, Americans for Prosperity. Thanks for coming in, man. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it.
We do have Paul Kazuka, Senate Majority Leader. He'll be joining us just after the bottom of the hour. Coming up, Minneapolis man-child Mayor Jacob Frey wants to fund $50 million in ambitious affordable housing projects.
Doesn't sound too affordable.
No. Yeah, well, it's ambitious just if he's trying to make himself look good.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew. Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelle coming up. Gubernatorial candidate Tim Pawlenty coming up. And Pete Hegseth from Fox News at 8:35 this morning.
We're going to talk about Minneapolis Mayor Manchild Jacob Frey here in just a moment. First off, though, I just saw this. I hadn't realized it had happened. Out of SeattleTimes.com, we had discussed this on the show late last week. After a weekend of high-stakes negotiations between the Seattle City Council members and Mayor Jenny Durkin, the council voted unanimously yesterday to tax the city's largest employers to help address homelessness.
Enjoy them while you can, Seattle.
Starting next year. This is unbelievable. Starting next year, the tax per employee for a company that grosses at least $20 million per year in the city, $275 per employee. That was down from a $500 per head proposal that Durkin threatened to veto. Oh, got to have standards.
If you are looking for a job in Seattle, understand that now you have a $275 price tag on your head that a company has to consider before they even hire you. That's $275 that they could have added to your pay.
These guys are insane. One council member, Teresa Mosqueda, said this: "We have community members who are dying. They're dying on our streets today because there's not enough shelter and affordable housing."
Is that Amazon's fault?
Right, yes.
Is that Microsoft's fault?
Yes. Yes, it is, Drew, because they have all that money.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
They're the ones that are responsible for this problem?
She said the tax will have a meaningful impact on addressing our homelessness crisis by building housing and providing health services.
I guarantee you. Look back on this 3 years from now and look at the Seattle's homeless problem 3 years from now, and it will be either worse or the same as it is now. Most likely worse.
Having paused construction with planning on an office tower over the larger proposal, Amazon will move ahead with it, a spokesperson said after the vote. But the company's plans to occupy a skyscraper under construction are still up in the air. A spokesperson for Amazon said, "We are disappointed by today's city council decision to introduce a tax on jobs. While we have resumed construction and planning for Block 18, we will remain very apprehensive about the future created by the council's hostile approach and rhetoric towards larger businesses, which forces us to question our growth here." I suspect, and we'll get to this story here from Mayor Jacob Fry. I suspect that the Seattle City Council waited just long enough to where Amazon was too far down the path that they couldn't pull back anymore. Like, it was more cost prohibitive for Amazon to completely yank all of their plans than to just go forward and accept the particular tax. And I bet that's why that number changed. I mean, this is all just I'm just suspecting, but I bet they went from 500 to 275 because they knew that Amazon could probably absorb that. But if they'd gone 500, that Amazon probably would have pulled everything all together. Just ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's insane.
It's insulting. I mean, it's insulting because it is. It's pointing at these companies that have done so much for Seattle. I mean, they have benefited Seattle beyond words. Beyond you cannot overstate the positive impact that these companies have had on Seattle, have had on the entire Pacific Northwest region. And they do all these things, you know, for the community. They provide all these jobs. They've turned it into a very desirable place to live. And you get a homeless problem and you just go, "Hey, you need to give us more money. You're responsible now for funding whatever solution we decide to come up with for this problem. You're going to pay for it." It's insulting, and I wouldn't blame Amazon. I wouldn't blame any of these companies that are being impacted, because this is a targeted tax. Not every business in Seattle is going to pay this tax, only the large employers.
Right.
I would not fault any of them for abandoning Seattle after this.
Well, and this is the example of, you repeat the lie enough and people will start to believe it, and take it and apply it to Governor Mark Dayton holding the legislature hostage over their tax bill, wanting this $138 million for emergency school funding. Just, "We need this or I'm not going to sign off on it." Because what has he said, right? That this tax cut, that this tax, you know, this conformity is going to be benefiting moneyed interest. It's the same idea. It's the same big business is bad. Big business is bad because big business makes a bunch of money. And so therefore we can vilify them. We can demonize them. This is the result of what happens when you continue to perpetuate that lie. when you vilify and demonize businesses just because they've actually had some success without looking at any of the benefits at all, you get decisions like the Seattle City Council to go and charge a $275 head tax on every single employee if they make $20 million a year. That's how dangerous that rhetoric can be. That's the result.
Yep.
You continue down these lines, I mean, we'll end up with you know, Minneapolis City Council making some. I mean, we got, you know, Mayor Jacob Fry wanting $50 million, doesn't know where he's going to get it from, for affordable housing. Mm-hmm. Ambitious affordable housing. That's not ambitious. That's lazy.
That's easy. Yeah.
Ambitious is actually doing and making positive steps so in the long term you can improve the economy so that people can actually have more success and businesses can be more successful. That's how you drive down the prices, or that's how at least you provide the opportunity for people to be able to afford housing, because affordable housing, that whole definition in and of itself, it's a moving target.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a moving target.
Right. Why not enable, empower, set up the economy, get the economy humming to the point where people can afford the housing that is currently in Minneapolis.
Right. That's ambitious.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That's honest.
Yeah.
That's how you actually deal with the problem. You don't just go, well, you know, Fry can't guarantee his budget proposal will include the $15 million for fund all the projects they're requesting. Where's he going to get the money? Well, I don't know about that right now. He basically, we don't have time to get to it now because we've got Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka coming up. We'll dive into this later on. But what he's rolled out here is basically just a pie in the sky proposal,
right,
to make him look good.
Because he knows that to a large portion of his constituency and a large portion of his supporters, all they care about is that number.
Yeah.
They hear $50 million for affordable housing and their brain turns off.
Just perception.
Now, cool. All right.
Yeah.
That's good. That's going to help fix the problem.
Yeah.
$50 million for affordable housing. Well, where's that money going to come from, and what exactly is it going to be spent on?
Don't matter.
I don't know. I don't care.
Doesn't matter.
Don't care.
Who's going to move into, who's going to move from where? Oh, I don't know.
$50 million for affordable housing.
Are the homeless going to move into the homeless? It doesn't matter. We're going to have it and we're going to spend it. Okay, cool. We're solid. You're great, Jacob Fry.
I want to go zip lining with you.
Go sing some more parody songs about yourself.
Whee!
Yay! Justice. Twin Cities News Talk. AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Justice. And Drew, along with Sam, was screening your phone calls at 651-989-5855. Use the hashtag TCNT. We've got gubernatorial candidate Tim Pawlenty calling in right around the top of the hour. We'll dive into all the details. This Fox 9 investigative report. Millions of dollars in suitcases fly out of MSP, but why? And this is all stemming from this alleged fraud and abuse of Minnesota taxpayer dollars happening at daycare centers. There's a lot to get to with this, and also a Senate investigation that we'll be talking about as well, which is obviously very relevant to our next guest.
Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, good morning, sir.
Talking to you again.
Thanks for checking in. How chaotic do you expect the end of this session to be? It's already starting off with an ultimatum from the governor, who, as Jason Flores mentioned earlier, you know, had previously, you know, submitted his supplemental budget and all that, and then showed up after that and decided he needed $138 million in, quote, emergency school funding. And now he has presented the legislature with an ultimatum: give him his school funding or Minnesotans will not enjoy the benefits of tax reform.
Well, you know, I hope he's bluffing, because if you went back to April 9th, he sent out a letter and said that we needed to figure out the tax bill. He wanted a bonding bill, fix pensions, do the opioid abuse program, safe schools, and elder abuse. Take care of all those issues, which we were all talking about. So we were basically all in agreement. And that's where the money was going to go, and suddenly he wants $138 million for all schools, not just for the schools that are short. They would be spread right across all schools.
We know that you and Speaker Dowd had requested a meeting with the governor, I believe, yesterday, and he declined. Was that your first indication that perhaps things were not going to go the way that you guys had hoped?
Well, you know, over the weekend we were fishing, so we were kind of working around our schedule for that, and I've been asking for meetings since last Friday. I thought we should be setting up and starting Monday morning Then that was put off. So I thought, okay, Monday afternoon, and that was put off. So our first meeting is actually coming up this morning in within about a half hour where we're going to start talking. But we have to deal with this new $138 million request because it doesn't fit anywhere. We don't have the money. And to not do tax conformity just because of this last-minute request, I think would be really unwise and make it really difficult for all Minnesotans when they file their taxes.
So what's the game plan at the moment? Is it kind of first and foremost just to talk with Governor Mark Dayton and find out where his head is at and try to, I guess, reason with him?
Yeah, I'm going to ask him why. You know, and I went through, for example, I looked at a bunch of the schools just to see where the money would go. And so, for example, the Minneapolis school system, I think they're something like $30 million short, a little over that. They would get about $6 million, but then another school like Anoka, they're about $2 million short, and we would give them $5 million. So it doesn't work. And so that's my first question is, you know, this doesn't even work. Why do we want to try to fix this at the very last second when we've all been working on all these other bills that we all agree we should get done?
Does this compromise the other things that you need to get done? How big of a bind does this put you in to now have to have this discussion over this $138 million? And are you not, and I guess, not deserving an office, but are you not in a position to just go, we can't do this, we've got to deal with this other stuff, and just kind of call his bluff on it?
Well, that's basically where I am at. I mean, because we all agreed on all these other things, and that's what we're going to keep working towards, it takes a lot of effort to get everybody on the same page, even within your own party, and then working with the other party and then working with the governor. We're running out of time. I mean, the last day we can actually pass bills is Sunday, even though we officially end Monday. Sunday's the last day, and I'd actually want to get done Friday at midnight.
All I can do is sit here and shake my head. This shouldn't be too unexpected. This has been the pattern with this governor. He's constantly moving the goalposts at the end of the session, and throwing in demands that were non-existent at the beginning of the session. So I hope you guys hold firm. I hope you guys call his bluff on this one. If he is indeed bluffing, we'll see how it shakes out. It certainly does put you guys in a bit of a tough position because, you know, you want to pass bills that you think have a good chance of the governor signing. And speaking of bills and the governor signing them.
If I can hit one more thing on the tax bill, because basically the money he wants for education is about the money we need on the tax bill to make sure individuals don't have a tax increase. And so when we conform to the federal government, so that's, I do not want to take that money away. I'm not interested in everybody paying a small tax increase just because of this education issue.
Well, and don't mean to walk out into the wilderness here on and start talking about beliefs, but there was one comment from the governor, the Star Tribune article, right at the end of the article. It says the governor said he's prepared to concede some details in the GOP tax plan to spur action on the school proposal. And he said there's no moral reason to deny the schools and school children emergency funds. This is what's right to do. And again, I don't want to start talking about beliefs, but, you know, morals aren't universal. I mean, what if your morals and values are aligning with the fact that you think it's immoral to go and just start arbitrarily tossing taxpayer dollars at school randomly, hoping that they're going to stick and go in and fix the problem? And again, I don't want to get stuck on, you know, semantics on this, but that really bothers me.
Well, and let me, one more thing. I mean, last year was the two-year budget, and we increased education funding $1.3 billion. And then this year, we're fixing their pension because they set up the guidelines around it that would cause it basically to fail unless we bail them out. So we're fixing that, and we're setting aside money for safe schools. In other words, to make the schools safer for people that want to do harm and provide more mental health resources. So we've done all those things, and yet it's still not enough. And it's like, you know, you have to draw a line somewhere, and this is where I've drawn the line.
We know there was, and we're going to be talking with a gubernatorial candidate, Tim Pawlenty, just at the top of the hour about this. But the Senate did announce yesterday a hearing to investigate fraudulent daycare assistant payments. This was a story that was highlighted, an investigative report in Fox 9 that reported 10 child care centers in Minnesota currently under active investigation for fraud, said each of the centers under investigation received several million dollars in child care assistance funds, and some of that money might be being sent overseas to actually go and help terrorist organizations. And we're going to get to the details on this, but is... were you aware of this before? Is this the first you've heard about this? Give us some of your thoughts on this bombshell story that dropped yesterday.
So I heard about it over the weekend. Senator Coran has been digging around this issue for a little while, so I knew it was coming. I just didn't know the depth of it. I mean, it's amazing the amount of money and where it's being sent. And so Senator Jim Abler then called a hearing, and, you know, I sure wish we had more than a week before we're out of session, but we're going to keep moving on this, you know, because, and this has probably been the most serious offense, but Minlars was a debacle before that, Minshew was a debacle for that. I mean, what are these agencies doing that they can't keep track of the dollars? I mean, even Minnesota Care, when they couldn't figure out, you know, that they weren't collecting enough money from folks, they just forgave $30 million that they didn't know where it was. I mean, so it's this mismanagement that's very, very frustrating.
I don't know.
This kind of thing can happen.
Senator Gazelka, with all due respect, I think calling it mismanagement is being too generous. I mean, it's gotten to the point now where it almost feels like it is intentionally ignoring waste, fraud, and abuse. And I say that because there have been efforts in the legislature to clamp down on the ability to abuse these programs, to clamp down on the waste, to go after the fraud, and it's been repeatedly struck down. It's been repeatedly derided by the DFL. It's been derided by the Dayton administration. Dayton, through all of these debacles, through the Minlars, Minshore, so on and so forth, has denied the fact that this is a cultural problem with his administration, and usually he just passes it off as, oh, those mean, intransigent Republicans who just want to make state government look bad.
Yeah, and that's where I hope, you know, we haven't had a House, Senate, and governor in Republican hands at the same time in my lifetime, and so I'm hoping for the opportunity, this would be one of the things that we actually could actually make a difference on, and because there's limited resources of dollars that the state government should have, and within those, we can't just be wasting them on things that like this. I mean, this is way past the last straw, but right. You know, let's do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is organizations defrauding the DHS, defrauding the Department of Human Services, and by all appearances, sending that money to a terrorist organization. I mean, if heads can't roll
a year,
yeah.
If department heads can't roll on this one, because Dayton, you know, he doesn't hold his agencies accountable. But if people can't be fired over this, I mean, this is in a sane and rational world, this would, I think, be grounds for talks of impeachment.
Yeah, I'll let that one go. But that's a bold
statement there, Drew.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. So what you're saying is you're going to have a real boring week. Is what you're saying there, Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka.
You know, we're like in a 747, and we're out of gas, and we got to land this baby. Huh. And it's trying to find the strip and hoping we make it within the runway space.
This is a terrifying example. I don't like to fly.
I do want to we'll finish off here giving you some kudos. The protest bill, increasing the penalties for freeway protests and things like that, did pass the Senate, yeah. Is headed to the governor's desk. I know you've gotten mixed messages from the governor on this. At times he's spoken out in favor of it. Other times he's sort of derided it. Any prediction, any thoughts on the fate of this bill now that it's heading to the governor's desk?
You know, I hope he signs it. You know, it's changing it, I believe, to a gross misdemeanor, so it's something like passing a school bus when they have the stop sign out. We've got to ask people to be more responsible I mean, just yesterday we had 14 people occupy a representative's office, and they kind of went in there, and I don't know if they broke in or the door was unlocked, but they finally had to be arrested. I mean, 14 people got arrested. So the sense of, you know, following the rule of law and being responsible feels like people are willing to cross that line, and this is one way to say, you know, you can protest. That's an important thing to do, but do it in a way that doesn't harm people or create problems that you shouldn't be creating.
Or break the law.
Right.
Do it in ways that don't break the law. There's plenty of ways to do that. Yeah. Senator Gazelka, thank you so much for your time. Always enjoy our chats. We catch up with you every Tuesday, and look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Yep, sounds good. We'll be done by then, so it'll be good to talk then.
Take care.
All right, coming up, we will be getting into, we're going to talk with the gubernatorial candidate, Tim Pawlenty. He wants to, he reached out to us wanting to, give his thoughts regarding this Fox 9, report on the tax dollars from childcare programs in Minnesota being diverted to terrorism. We're also going to get into great detail of the story from Fox 9. There's a lot to unpack with this. There's one, Powerline blog put up a whole, and it's really interesting too. If you just Google, investigation daycare centers Minnesota, a whole bunch of articles pop up from overnight, and a lot of political line, a lot of lines being drawn along political lines. Powerline blog put up a really good piece kind of breaking this whole thing down. There's one comment in here, Drew, before we go to break. Evidently, welfare fraud, this is just the way this is written, and this isn't a dig on Powerline, it's just frightening. Evidently, welfare fraud in various forms is widespread in Minnesota's Somali immigrant community. This is, I think, generally known, but the scale of fraud disclosed here is astonishing. Yeah. It's frightening to think that there was already sort of this idea out there or talk out there that their fraud was taking place, and it was kind of generally known. It just took this Fox 9 investigation to reveal the lengths and the amount of money that was being sent out of the, of Minneapolis airport going to Middle Eastern countries, including Somalia. And we're getting into that too. Somalia is run by Al-Shabaab. And if you listen to the show for any length of time and heard our counterterrorism expert, David Gartensteiner-Ross, they're bad.
Yeah, they ain't no joke.
They're really good at like terrorism and murder. It's really bad.
And Minnesota, the Twin Cities specifically, has long been a hotbed for recruitment for Al-Shabaab specifically.
Oh, it's frightening. We're going to break down all the details and talk with Tim Pawlenty coming up. Justice.